You're listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Hey everybody, I have Shimon Georgette Khoury, writer, poet, just read her books, Peach Milk and What Haunts Me the Most, and I gotta tell you, I'm so excited to have you on the show, Shimon. Welcome to Something Rather Than Nothing.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. We were just chatting, heading into the show here. Lots to talk about art and writing, but talking about, reviews and, I do a podcast and, I think there's something weird about podcasting. It's like, I got a lot of positives about it and, I think those are deserved and I love that. But there's this like fierce philosopher in me that wants somebody to drop down and call bullshit so I can have a fight. and we were chatting a little bit about the importance of of getting reviews, so you're writing and it can feel like lonely, isolating work, and in writing too, such a tough trade, and you're looking for feedback, and so I wanted to ask you just like, starting from the beginning, and I want to get a little bit into kind of the, reaction to your work and its content. But, I wanted to start off cause I was really interested in this is, when did you see yourself as an artist or a writer? When did you kind of see yourself inhabiting that as an identity?
Wow. That's a really powerful question. I've never been asked that before. I feel like I didn't see myself as a writer, like it became my identity until, I want to say after Peach Milk was published. For a long time, like I had all these goals and I was really scared and I don't know, I felt like, and I have this issue where I have to have a title to feel like I am something. And unfortunately, that was with writing. Like, as soon as Peach Milk got picked up, I was like, oh, I'm a writer. Yeah. I'm an author. I'm a published author now. Like, but I really wish that I would have believed that, when I first started taking writing seriously, which was probably college. I majored in English. I minored in creative writing. So I was taking all these writing classes. I was writing all these stories, all these poems. And then I just didn't believe it. I was like, I'm not a writer until I get something published.
And that was just at that point, did you feel that when that happened? Like, just like you said like, oh, I'm a writer. This is what I do now. Right.
I don't know. Cause sometimes I still like, I feel like I still don't feel like that. Like, I still feel like, okay, I got published twice by indie presses, which is amazing. It's awesome. But I haven't been published by Penguin. So I'm still not a writer. I'm not published by the big five. So I'm still not a writer. And I'm trying to really break out of that because it's such a horrible mindset to have. Like, I wouldn't be the person I am today if it wasn't for writing. So I feel like I've always been like, I should believe that I have always been a writer. Storytelling has been with me since I can remember. My mom, she is a big reader, and I always grew up watching her read. She was really big on Anne Rice and those what are they called? Like the ones with the Fabio covers. She was like big on those romances, and then
romance and
And then like my dad's like the biggest storyteller I know. So I grew up listening to all of his stories. So writing has always been with me. So I really wish that. And maybe, that'll happen soon. I really wish I would believe that,
Yeah.
I've always been a writer.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird thing. And I think a lot of times when people apply those names to themselves, particularly if in the social context, they could be viewed as boastful, right? So I would, I wrestled around this, I studied a whole lot, and had a life at the university and taught at the university, and I would refer to myself as an intellectual, but it took a long time with that. It's like, oh, you can't call yourself an intellectual or a philosopher, right? You know, to be a philosopher, everybody's a philosopher, you know, like that type of thinking, or, you know, are you teaching philosophy and then you're a philosopher? Or it the identity piece around that is I find it to be quite complicated. You mentioned your dad, and I saw in writing about your background and bio mentioned him as a storyteller. And is that kind of that you picked up the comfort and kind of like telling story and using words? That must have been such a huge influence, kind of like hearing that throughout, you know, growing up, it sounded like.
I think so. This is actually in my writing bio, but we had a power outage one Christmas and I was little. It was definitely before 2003. So I want to say maybe like 2001, 2002. And I remember I was laying in bed with my mom and my dad, and to keep me occupied, my dad was telling stories about growing up in Lebanon. And I don't know, like, I feel like that moment cemented everything. Like, these are stories that have stuck with me. These are stories that inspired my own stories. Like, some of them are creepy stories. So I feel like that's where a lot of my influence has come from, is definitely my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Your writing, going through your writing, a lot of references to horror and maybe body horror. Do you feel your work, do you feel comfortable with that, with your work?
Like being considered horror?
Yeah.
So going back to that review that I received, the person was talking about how what haunts me the most is being, you know, revealed as this horror book. And it's definitely, I feel like it definitely has horror traits. Like, to me, I would consider my word girl horror. All about being a girl. And I think people just have this one mindset of the horror genre. And I think some people that picked up the books, they thought that they were going to get like a Freddy Krueger type like monster. And I don't write that. I don't think I'll ever write that type of horror, but I do like to pick on some things. Like I love the final girl. The whole final girl trope is what love. Really inspires me and haunts me the most.
Love.
Yeah. So it's like, I think people need to just break away from the traditional horror, which I have no problem with. I love slasher movies, but if you want to pick up my work, you're not going to get a monster.
Yeah.
I think the monster in these books is just my narrator, her life, and trying to break free from everything that's harming her.
I love the expansion of horror and its idea. And I also think of monsters. I have a good influential friend of mine I've known for a while, named Devin, and she does a lot. She's teaches literature and talk about monsters and what monsters are and why monsters are monsters where they are. And I'll say this very specifically, like, for me, it was ringing in my head, the famous album by Hole, Live Through This, and parts and pieces, which are psychological, and they're horror in the sense of like exposure and things like that. They're just far more subtle themes. And I had that like going through my head of parts and like almost like psychological dismemberment. So like in using the horror, I think we have that where it's like in Final Girl, hell yeah, on Final Girl, right? Like this podcast has an official scream queen, Susie Block. So I love dropping into like
I love that,
you know, and just that, I don't know, the Final Girl's path. And when like, I don't know, even in Alien, where the Final Girl is like the biggest feminist I could think of, you know, with Ripley, super exciting and nuanced. I was just kind of interested, because when the term's thrown out there, it can be really mess with people's expectation. And you know, within art, thinking about, you know, monsters and horror, I wanted to ask you, the big question was probably intimidating in the sense of, you know, when did you see yourself as an artist? But what do you see as art? What is art itself for you?
Wow. Oof. This is a big question.
I know. I do this all the time on this show. I do this all the time. Yeah.
For me, I see art as therapy. I tried regular therapy at one point and it didn't work with me. I probably just didn't have a great therapist. We just didn't vibe. But when I wrote Peach Milk and when I wrote What Haunts Me the Most, obviously I am still going through some things that I wrote Peach Milk and What Haunts Me the Most about, but I feel stronger and I feel more positive. So I can't imagine not writing, because if I didn't write, I think I would get sick. Like, yeah. If I don't write, I feel so congested. I don't feel good. Like, I have to get the stuff out. And I have a hard time. We talked about this before we started recording, just like the lump in my throat when I need to talk about something, when something bothers me. Like, if something, you know, I still have stuff to do with my parents. I still have a lot of work to do with them, but I think we are getting somewhere. But still, like, if I want to talk to them about something, I can still feel that lump in my throat. Yeah. And I want to throw up. So without writing, I don't know where I would be. I would probably be absolutely insane. But yeah, to me, that's what art is. It's my therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was astounded as I've been recording the show for 5 years. And I think anytime you do something, whether it's writing or creating something, I think one of the most fascinating parts of it is you really don't totally know why you're doing it. At least for me at inception, like, and, you know, the role of art and philosophy is, you know, for therapy and not cutesy at all, of like a way to process, a way to overcome or make sense of. And I find for me, those have been the big things in a strict mental sense or understanding and philosophy of being enjoying impossible questions, but also within art of being like a lot of times delving into something or just to have a physical reaction to an art piece that you can't explain, that you know is good for you. Like, you don't, why explain? Yeah. You know it is. That's why you're staring at it. You're like, I'm just looking. And that type of power, I just can't find, you know, and so attraction to art and writing. Do you think that's the basic role of art? It's a question I ask, is like the role of art. Is it, you think it is geared towards making better or healing?
Maybe making better, but also I really, and maybe this is like a cliche, but also the connection. I've had people message me about specifically Peach Milk and just how much the book has helped them and, you know, how they thought they were alone. And I was like, oh my God, I thought I was alone. You know, that's why I wrote this book.
Yeah.
And like what you were saying, when you look at something and it just speaks to you, like, it's that connection. Like, I absolutely love it. Like, I feel like everything that we're drawn to, there's always a reason why we're drawn to it. And I'm still trying to figure out, you know, that specific reason. I love it so much. I think it's really beautiful.
It's a mystery. I've been really excited to have a whole bunch of writers recently, more still coming on the show later in 2023 and here in 2024. And we have a connection, Elise Versella, for example, had a wonderful.
Love Elise, love episode. You.
Yeah. And, got TJ McGowan coming on. I've had a fantastic episode, mind-blowing episode, L. Nash. And
I saw that and I thought that was awesome.
Oh my God.
That you had L. Nash on. That's pretty cool.
I'm still, yeah. But the thing is with dropping it to writers, and, you know, my study going back years ago, I've always been a book guy. There's something about the vibrancy of new writing. I had somebody contact me on a show. I didn't even know she was into Cormac McCarthy, who I'm kind of a madman for Cormac McCarthy.
And, me too. I am too.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got into Cormac on the piece, like the last book he wrote, and of course he recently passed away, Stella Maris, which I explained to her. I said, I haven't read, and I do this with books because, like, an example is a weird example of a series of unfortunate events. I fucking love those books. Like, I just adored those books, but I left that last book like unread for a silly amount of time. And for me, it's extreme reaction. One is like, I'm burying through everything and then maybe I'll reread it again. I'm like, nope, I don't want to complete it. I need one more surprise and I'm going to still wait. And Stella Maris ended up being there. I mean, I still haven't read it, but I couldn't be more intrigued because I had read an article and I understood of its setting in Black River Falls. And, McCarthy's deep interest in a cult book. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Wisconsin Death Trip.
I'm not familiar with that.
This was a book in the 1970s. As odd as a thing you can find, because it was written by an academic, might even been part of a thesis, but it was this exploration both in old photography and in writing of Black River Falls, Wisconsin, where it was just massive series of strange events in a kind of combination of people, a lot of immigrants coming in, some rural farmers who had been there, and just, it's kind of mayhem, a death, a young death, derangement, different type of characters in town who would just break windows and they couldn't do anything to stop it. Just a bizarre assemblage. And then reading that McCarthy was deeply into this book, and then with Stella Maris, I'm like, this is about as big of a setup of, I couldn't be more fascinated. But I've left that there. But I found when you're talking about books with folks, you just end up in just some wild, you know, some wild and wonderful places. I wanted to ask you, me talking about Cormac McCarthy, feel free to jump in on that, but I also wanted to hear from you what writers like excite you and being like, shit, man, this is writing. Like, what's for you?
Should I do like writers that are still alive or writers that have passed?
I'm
gonna do some recent stuff because we talked about this before we started recording. Like, people don't really read a lot of recent, you know, newer writers. I loved My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell. I loved that book. The subject matter is super dark. But the way she wrote was very beautiful. I ended that book sobbing. And that hadn't happened to me for a very long time. And I read that back in, I want to say, like, spring 2022, and I haven't been able to find a book since then that has just made me bawl my eyes out. And I'm talking, like, fiction. I have a hard time lately with fiction. I can't find, like, a good book. But that book just – it's and a lot of people have so many issues with it, but I understand that the subject matter needs to be taken seriously. It's about a young girl who develops a relationship with her teacher. So, Lolita vibes.
Yeah.
But I also love Lolita, and obviously not because of the subject matter, just want a disclaimer. But the writing is beautiful.
Oh God.
And then another book that I read fiction, because I mostly read a lot of fiction, was The God of Animals by Erin Kyle, I want to say. That's the name of the author. She has a short story collection, which I had picked up, and I liked it. And then I saw another book of hers at a book sale. And I was like, oh, I really liked her short story collection. I'm going to pick up her novel.
Yeah.
Blown away. Yeah. I was blown away. It was so gorgeous. So those are two writers I think that people really need to check out. I don't think they get enough credit. I feel like with Kate Elizabeth Russell, like, I feel like she gets a lot of hate for, you know, writing about such a dark subject. But I don't know. You don't know what people are going through when they're writing about something. You don't know if this is something that they also experienced. But yeah, definitely those two. And then when it comes to poets, oh my God, I don't even know where to go. Elise, number one.
Elise Frisella.
We love you here.
Something Rather Than Nothing alum. And we do take a moment or two. I have copies of most of Elise's work, and I've read a whole bunch. It was such a great pleasure to have her, and we got a like overall East Coast Jersey connection going on. Shout out to Shimon with out in Jersey. I've had some Jersey folks. I'm recording on the other side. I'm literally for this episode seaside in Waldport, Oregon, and one cool thing about right up the road in Newport, Oregon. There's a sign for Route 20 that says 3,300 and something miles to Boston. You could take it across the country.
That's insane. That's insane.
Is quite a thing. But Elise talking about poets. Yeah, talk about poets.
Yeah, definitely Elise. Jess Ballin, they're another one. They just came out with Kosher. Loved it. I can't think of anyone else, really, like, on the top of my tongue. Mostly all, like, the East Coast poets, like, because I perform with them.
Yeah.
And they're great people. So if you want to check out the Jersey scene, I guess, look into the New Jersey Renaissance.
Yeah. Jersey scene. Shout out to Jersey.
Jersey scene.
Hey, everybody, it's a little bit difficult. I'm up from Rhode Island. I'm giving a good shout out to Jersey. Let it be noted. I listeners can't see what's behind you, but I feel neglectful. I see shiny, wonderful, artistic objects. I don't know, album covers and so. What space? Like, what's in the space? Just like tell me, because I can't quite see it all, but it's gorgeous and bright.
Thank you. I still live at home with my parents. So this is my spot. This is my space. This is my bedroom. This is my workspace. So over here is my bed. Oh, you can't even see it. You still can't see it. You still can't see it, but that's my bed. I got the Beatles up there because I was really big into the Beatles as a teenager. I still like the Beatles, but I feel like I like other bands more than I like the Beatles now. And then I have my bookshelf right here. And then I have books on the floor over there too, but this is mainly the shelf. I know it's like cramped in there. But I've got a lot of thrifted paintings. I've got Danny from Midsummer right there. I don't even like the movie that much. I just really like the aesthetic of it. I got Marilyn right there. And just a bunch of books, Christmas lights that are going out. I just always like to have lights in my room because it's dark and I live in the basement.
I love the lights.
Thank you.
I've had a whole bunch of conversation with folks lately. I know I've been around folks over time, and you know, keeping lights on or light sensitivity. Like it's funny because I think, well, I don't know if it's funny because sometimes it's a bit of an overbearing thing for people like around light, but like sometimes when you step into a spot and the light's so like, oh my God, like somebody has me in their, like in the crosshairs, like here. So I love, there's a nice piece about, you know, I don't know, it's holiday lights and lighter lights and different type of colors, you know, sensitivity to color and stuff like that. It's just such a nice,
my room, you know, gets me through the day, I think.
Yeah. Hey, and that's that the environment is so super important. I on Midsommar, one of the greatest gifts I have received on this show, and is an artist, Vanessa Stockard, in Australia, who I just adore, and she has a dark comic wrinkle in all her paintings. Highly prolific, does 2, 3, 4 paintings a day, and shocking, wow, like how amazing they are. But she drew Danny with the flower dress, like an original for me. And
I love that.
Like, when you're into paintings, or like particular paintings, there's something about it. Like, when you just like looking at it, and like that thing was created from these hands, you know, from these hands, and
yeah,
that right in front of me, and oil and the texture of it. Like, I found myself being super sensitive. Like, when you see like the painting, when it's raised a bit, and you're like, I don't want to touch it ever. I don't want grease or human hands to mess with it, but I kind of want to take a bite out of it at the same time. I don't know what to do, and I have paintings like that. Like, I don't know what to do with you. I want to bite. Yeah. I'm just gonna leave it be and just continue to admire it forever.
It's insane when you think about what a human being can do.
Yeah,
whether it's writing, painting, whatever. Like, it's insane, and I don't think that we give artists enough credit.
I agree, and it's always a great pleasure to kind of to talk to artists like yourself. Peach Milk was really big for you, and just so listeners know, Peach Milk, yeah, what haunts me the most. What I was telling Shim before we went on here is that, and with all, just as with a disclaimer, I find, even though I've studied literature for so long, I've studied formally at the university, I've read, just hundreds of thousands of pages. Sometimes with writing, it's tough to describe like what it is. It's, for me, it tends to be an interactive experience, but, I loved your writing. And for me, whenever I try to write, or what I'm particularly sensitive to, is basically, I think, idiosyncratic combinations of words that have a beauty to them, even if they're disruptive or the ideas are disruptive. And the lyricism in the presentations, poetic, but having this narrative flow. I just really love your writing, and I really thoroughly enjoyed both of those works. And what I committed to you is putting this down in writing, which we were talking about at the beginning. If you love your writers who are, you know, everybody thinks, I think sometimes for folks who don't know about writing, or people who do art, it's like, if you made something, put it out there and got it published, like, you're fucking set somehow. Like, or if you have an album, that like you're making bank. And artists know everything that goes behind that is a lot of times it's a very different type of thing. So
yeah,
harder with the show, and always encouraging folks to spend a little bit of time to say that you love something and why personally that you love it, because it really helps. When I read, like, for example, even before reading your book and seeing what Elise Frisella had to say about it, like, I'm like, oh shit. Like, I talked to her, I love her writing, and it really has an impact. And, so I think a lot of times podcast folks say, hey, make sure you rate and review and all that type of thing. But seriously, for folks who are doing art, if you really love it, take the time. And, you know, Shimon, you know, the tough review can suck, but like, fuck that noise. Somebody's going to hate on anybody putting two words together or longer than that. And, so if you love it, folks, you know, engage and let the folks know. What was it like getting those books published?
Surreal, I think. Like, I feel like it hasn't even, Peach Milk, it took a while for it to even set in. Like, as soon as I got the physical copy, I was like, I'm still not a writer yet. And then, like, a couple weeks later, when people, like, started getting their copies and reading it, they were like, oh my God, I love it. And I was like, oh my God, there's people out there that are like actually buying my work and like want to support me. Like, that's insane. But it was a really nice process. Like with both books, Bottle Cap and Carencia were great publishers. I wouldn't change them at all. I felt like Bottle Cap was the perfect book to publish a chapbook through. And I really worked with Craig, who's the editor in chief. Just, you know, we looked over the book like a lot of times. And, you know, we worked with getting the cover, which I think is absolutely beautiful. And then with Emily, who's the editor in chief at Carencia, I mean, she was amazing. Like, I have the cover here right now. I know that they can't see me, but I absolutely love this cover. I think it's great.
I love that title too. Yeah.
And it's different. I feel like it's very different from Peach Milk, which I like, because I feel like, I don't know, this is just my opinion. I think Peach Milk is softer than What Haunts Me the Most. I feel like What Haunts Me the Most really grips you by the throat. But yeah, they were great, both great publishing processes, and I couldn't be more grateful, honestly. But yeah, like, it took a while for it to like sit in that, oh, these are out in the world, they're published. I feel like What Haunts Me the Most came quicker than Peach Milk, I think, because we did a pre-order with What Haunts Me the Most. We were getting readers already reviewing it before it was officially published. So yeah, that was really nice. And it was a couple days after my birthday, and I was like, oh, like, you know, 28 is going to be awesome. This is going to be so cool. So both great experiences.
Wonderful. I've been excited on the show. Maybe been around a little bit and folks seeing my interest in thing where I get books sent to me, and oh my gosh, I had a Kate Brody, published her first novel called Rabbit Hole, which is an incredible, tough to describe, but like a mystery, psychological, thriller. But just even her episode coming out the same day as that was published, and I have a guest in the near future, Catherine Yeske Taylor, did a Badass Women in Rock, feminist, different approaches to feminism, just kick-ass women in rock and roll, and that just came out, and it's on its second printing. And so it's been kind of fun to be around like publishing and see how this happens, and see like what's going on. And I like the vibrancy of it. I feel like each year I kind of feel like excited about what books, you know, it might encounter, and love talking to writers like you. I have a very difficult question, or maybe it's the easiest one in the world that you can imagine. Why is there something rather than nothing?
When you told me you were going to ask me this question last week, I was thinking about it.
I don't bullshit. Everybody thinks I'm not. Like, people hold on last hope. I know they do. And they're like, that dude's not going to ask me that. And then he does. So.
No, I've been thinking about it all week, honestly. I don't know. I feel like I don't want to get hate for this. I don't want people to judge me for my answer. But I grew up Catholic. So I do believe that there is a God. I believe that there's something out there. So I don't know. I can't imagine us being brought here and there's like no reason for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like and it keeps me hopeful that, you know, when we do die, that we go somewhere. I don't like the idea of it. It really freaks me out that when we die, it's just black. Like that, I can't sleep at night when I start thinking about that. So
I'm the same. I'm absolutely the same on that. It's a real, real phenomena for people to think about.
Yeah, can't do that. But it's like, would it matter because I'm dead? But like, I have to believe that there's something else. Because if I don't believe it, like, I feel like, what's the point?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's probably, you know, my Catholic upbringing, and, you know, I've been around religion, again, all my life. You know, I went to CCD, so, you know, I'm not heavily concerned with the Bible, but I do believe that, you know, there is a God, there is something, someone out there.
Yeah. Hey, Shimon, I went to CCD myself. And for those out there, that's, I don't know, the easiest way to describe it. Catholic learning. I think I went during the week. I think some folks might normally.
Me too. I went on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, yeah. I went during the week, and I enjoyed it. I'm agnostic in my general thinking, but I adore Jesus Christ, and a lot of people it drives them mad because it's idiosyncratic thinking, right? Like mm-hmm. I have to kind of like, and I'm very influenced by Buddhist philosophy, but I think a lot of people can have their own particular reading, particularly of a prophet or an important religious person.
Agreed.
And I have my reading, deep reading of Christ, and Christ and fascinates me. And I was just joking with some friends just a few days ago, and I was confirmed. And so folks who aren't familiar with the Catholic faith, it's your First Communion would be where you take the First Communion body of Christ,
yes,
and is a step to your growing, learning and becoming Catholic. And with the confirmation is easiest way to describe as like the adult, you would take that step to be an adult Catholic.
Yeah.
They gave me a written type, and I want to call it an exam. It seems improper, but it might as well have been. I did horribly on it.
I had to do an exam too.
Did you?
But I don't remember. Well? Yeah.
Did you do well on it, or did you answer?
I honestly don't remember. But I did have to do an exam, and I had to write a paper on the saint that I chose.
Who'd you choose?
My name. I think I picked Saint Audrey.
Okay.
And I don't remember anything about Saint Audrey.
That's fine. That's fine. You're not on the spot for that.
Yeah.
I took the test, and my answers were honest as could be. They were as honest as could be, but they weren't correct. And they took me aside. I think it was a side conversation crossing their fingers and said, we'll let him through. He seems to have a decent heart. But I don't know about quality control there. It was my thinking on it. I was never quite sure how. Yeah.
I feel like going to CCD, like for a while, like during my early teen years, probably till like maybe 17, 18, like I didn't know what to believe.
Yeah.
I was very angry with the world. Teen angst. I was really unhappy and just. It went away for a while, but as I've gotten older, like, I've returned back to, you know, my faith, and how you feel about Jesus Christ is how I feel about the Virgin Mary. I love her. You know, I love everything about her. I'm very fascinated by her story. I feel like she doesn't get enough credit. I feel like a lot of women in Catholicism don't get enough credit, but, it's like, I don't agree with everything about Catholicism, but... You know, if someone asked me what's my religion, I would say, yeah, I'm Catholic.
I got a scholarship to study philosophy at Marquette University. I'd never been to a private institution in my life, and they're a Jesuit. And it was a real, at least initially, a very deep and difficult adjustment. I had moved from Washington, D.C. to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and was studying master's in philosophy, again, at a Jesuit institution. There were things, my goodness, I just did not know, where some of the kind of background of some of the folks more maybe traditional-minded, I just felt everybody's smarter than me. Everybody, you know, it was very, very intimidating. But I made my way through it, and I learned – some deep things about some Christians are around that I would never have had. They respected the heck out of me. Not everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. for some folks, I was just hopeless. But there was a limited amount of people. There were a lot of people who became very close to me. Couldn't it be more different than some of my mental approach and approach to organized religion that I developed deep relationships with. I also saw for the first time in my life, at least with some of the traditions of folks that I was around, that they lived it. That if there was, I had a friend of mine, no money, we're philosophers, right? And he's from Nebraska, he's a member of a free church out there. And we talk about religion all the time. Everything I got kind of from that church, I learned from him. Mm-hmm. But if somebody was hungry, and we didn't have a ton of stuff, he'd bring them in. Doesn't matter who they were. Bring them in, make a meal, make some coffee. I'd never seen that in my life.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I'm like, okay, like I'm this kind of socially minded, like labor activist type of thing. I'm like, this is the work. This is the work. And I had such a deep respect in it. And I hadn't been around it, at least where I lived or the people who are around. And so when I experienced that, it was very meaningful to me. I'll tell you one other thing. These same friends, when I was in a significant relationship and that had broken off, and I've been in this relationship for 7 years, I was devastated. They referred to what I was going through as a divorce, and we weren't married. And from a traditional religious perspective, for them to use that word to give some context to what my experience was, I still can't believe it, because I just understood is like there's legitimacy and there's illegitimacy in that type of view. But they treated me with care in my needs at that time by affirming me and what I was going through, which I believe could have been not affirmed by a lot of people. You shacked up for a while, didn't work out, and you know, you go on. And that changed things. That changed my experience. So for me, the deep of experience with all the difficulties I have within my social outlook, with the church per se, that that I think all of us deal with, a lot of people deal with. For me, it was the experiential piece of what folks who claim to be Christian, that I saw them as the most noble parts of Christianity, that mm-hmm. changed the way that I thought about things and I live. So it was like, how do people live? What do they do? And there's a whole bunch of stuff to ignore or see as hypocritical that I don't need to engage with. So it's always a complicated relationship. There was great comfort in a place I really, I guess I'd never expected it. So,
yeah, like, I mean, I think that's beautiful, but I also feel like religion does get a bad rep, because I feel like everything that you see online, it's always like the bad parts of it, mm-hmm. but there's always going to be people like that want to take care of you. So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I feel like we need to stop always focusing so much on the bad parts of it, because it's not all like that. You know, not everyone that believes in God or, and you know, whoever is a Christian, like they're not all what you see online.
Yeah. Speaking of Virgin Mary, I grew up in Rhode Island, a large Portuguese population, family background, Portuguese. And the miracle at Fatima always super fascinated me. It was the appearance of the Virgin Mary seen by a peasant girls out in Fatima. Yeah. So I think sometimes where you live and what you hear and those type of traditions, and of course, Mary's a role in some countries, there's the, given that she's a woman, I think that's a huge challenge to the patriarchal structures of it. And it's kind of like, love the Virgin Mary up to a point, don't push it too far, right? I always share that fascination. It was great to hear that from you. Wow, that's some heavy stuff, huh?
Really. I don't usually talk about stuff like that either.
I don't so drop. Yeah, it's cool. Hey, Shimon, I wanted to see if you wanted to do a reading.
I can do it right now if you want me to.
Would love it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I'm going to read from Peach Milk. I'm going to read The Deadly Poppy Field, because I really love this piece. I don't know. I think it's the strongest piece in the collection, but that's just me. The deadly poppy field. A meadow is no place to hide, its mass of poisonous poppies soothing us to sleep. Snakes consume the velvet ribbons tied to my thighs, my sheer stockings crumpled in a pile beneath your feet. I know what scares you the most, the deer in the lake, when it turned to look at you with only half a face. You approached me, a dead-end sign reflected in your eyes. I kissed your open mouth anyway, my body breaking beneath the weight of your grief. It's time to obliterate your euphoric daydreams, a triple X fantasy of me walking through flames, kissing my parents goodbye. I shoved midnight clouds into my mouth like cotton candy, my stomach permanently swollen, like your bloody knuckles, after you mistakenly trusted the train tracks and found two men burning a woman alive, the skin around her neck shrinking. That's what life is, to come full circle. You squeeze through your mother's birth canal, make her burn, and wind up burning yourself in the end. I smell death in the grass. A neighbor's cat strikes a field mouse in the back of its neck, abandons it. If I can't find you in the pitch black room, at least I can say I tried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In doing the show, poetry and spoken word and music, I found it's always this great injection to hear the art. And I mentioned this before to folks, when I haven't had enough in that, I kind of get stagnant myself in the interaction. So there's just something beautiful about that, about the words. And thank you so much for doing that too.
Thank you so much for letting me do it. I loved it.
Yeah. This is a playground. This is a playground here. I sent a couple links to folks and like, I'd like to do something sometime. I send them room. I'm like, this is your playground. Plop in whatever the heck plop in there. let's talk about now and where folks can where can they find your writing, your art? What are you up to? Anything we should be looking for? Where to look for you? All that type of stuff.
I feel like I have so much going on. So you can follow me on Instagram at Grandma Goth.
love the handle.
my boyfriend calls me Grandma Goth, so I was like, you know what, this is the perfect handle for me. Perfect. You can follow me at Grandma Goth on Instagram. The O in Goth is a zero. You know, I was trying to make it all cool.
It's cool. Don't worry. It is cool. Heroes, O's, Grandma Goth. We love it.
And then I also have a Substack, and that's Grandma Goth as well. And I post on Substack, I post a lot of personal stuff on there. So if you like ghost stories, it's the perfect place for it. You can also find my, I'm stuttering, I don't know why, sorry. You can also find, I have a link tree that is on my Instagram. That's in my bio. All, you know, you can find the books there, some interviews there, and my Substack is there. So you should just follow me on Instagram because everything is there. I got rid of my personal website because I felt like I just wasn't using it.
Yeah.
I felt like it wasn't doing much for me. So I just got the link tree, and put everything on there. So follow me on Instagram at Grandma Goth.
Nowhere to find you. And, it's really great to, really appreciating the community on the show here and talking about writing. And I have a great respect for the writers and poets I've talked to, doing things of talking in front of folks, delivering a performance, writing things that honestly scare me to write about. Anytime I do it, I have a huge hurdle for myself of, there's no way I can show somebody that I thought about that. There's no way, you know? And I think there's that bravery in that. That's not to be missed. Really enjoy your writing. And heck, even on this interview, where else can we talk about painting, Virgin Mary, Catholicism, Final Girls, Cormac McCarthy, Madness in the Midwest, you know, so.
This is everything I love.
Hey, you know, everything I love too. So why do you do the show? I don't know. So I could talk to some great artists and talk about some wild shit, and we could feel comfortable about it. So I hope that's what the show is. And I want to thank you so much, Shimon, Georgette, Corey, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun. I like I said, I don't get to normally talk about the Virgin Mary, and I guess sometimes I do get to talk about the Final Girl, but not as much as I want to. So yeah, thank you so much for having me.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.
And listeners, to stay connected with us and our guests, visit somethingratherthannothing.com. Join our mailing list for exclusive updates and access to guest-created art. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode, please like, subscribe, and leave a review on your podcast platform. People really read that shit. Your support helps us reach more listeners and spread our community across the planet. This is a global show, and we like to give a shout out to our many listeners across the world, including many listeners in Canada, Spain, Germany, UK, Argentina, Brazil, India, Thailand, and so many more places. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Something Rather Than Nothing Podcast for behind the scenes content. And the best way to help the show is to tell your friends about us. If you love it, they'll love it too. Tell your friends who love it. We love you. This is Something Rather Than Nothing Podcast.